Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, John. It's good to be here. I'm Keith Meyer, President of International at Assurant.
Keith, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Before we dive in and talk further about Assurant and your area of responsibility that falls under your purview, give us a thumbnail version of your career to date.
All right, so I'll try and do a thumbnail version. it's been an interesting journey. Maybe I'll start with joining Assurant about 23 years ago, which is hard for me to believe. Assurant was a client of mine in Miami, where I think you're located as well, John, right?
Yeah.
And so Assurant was a client of mine, but I actually joined the company in Southern California. And so was in Southern California for about 8 months, living out of a hotel with the idea to relocate that business back somewhere east. We ended up doing that. I moved back to Tampa, Florida. And then we had a good run in Tampa. And then I was asked to move to Atlanta after that. And I've kind of settled in and had some roots and had the family kind of expand now that I've been in Atlanta for probably about the last 17 years or so.
Well, that's super exciting. And it's interesting how that relationship evolved, first being the kind of the client relationship and then you joining the organization and now leading one of the largest divisions of the overall organization. That's super exciting. So you now in charge of the international business of Assurant. Give us an overview of what falls under your purview, and then I would like to spend a little bit more time in terms of some of the strategies they implement to lead this division.
Yeah, sure. So for international, I guess that's probably the easiest job I've had to explain is I'm just responsible for anything outside of the U.S. So that makes it pretty easy. I think the interesting thing about the journey that I talked about from a location perspective was also the variety of positions that I've had that, I've done, started with finance and operations, sales and marketing, running a couple of different businesses in the US for Assurant, doing mergers and acquisitions and global strategy. And I didn't predict it, but that kind of led me into then running international for Assurant for the last 5 years or so. And so as part of that, maybe I'll just explain a little bit about Assurant. So Assurant is a Fortune 500 company that really supports and protects all the, if you think about the large purchases consumers make, so protecting homes, cars, consumer electronics, appliances, mobile phones as well. So we're kind of the company that works with all these global leading brands that you may not know, but we're kind of the company behind the scenes of all the brands in those categories that when we look to support and protect those purchases.
Well, that's very interesting. And for the listeners, some of the background story, I guess also, I've spent some time at Assurant many years ago down in the Miami office where we were building a claims processing system. So that's my close kind of relationship with Assurant. That's why this episode is, I was very excited about this. Keith, so you've been with Assurant for quite some time. You've seen the industry evolve in all different directions, different cycles. Obviously, you also get a lot of exposure into the international markets and industries. Tell us a little bit more about the trends that are really exciting to you these days, whether from your industry perspective or something in general. What are you researching? And, in a sense, what is on Keith's the next big thing radar?
Yeah, well, at Assurant, we spend a lot of time paying attention to, both trends in the U.S. and globally. So for international, I'm responsible for 20 countries where we have substantial presence. And so I think it actually gives us a great advantage, John, when you think about, you know, how to respond and how to innovate in markets that are never, that's never an easy thing to do, is just to say, why don't you just go innovate on a new trend? Well, it's easy to say, very hard to do. But I think a couple advantages we have are, one is we work with all these leading global brands around the world where we're able to talk to them about the strategies that they're developing, how they're responding to trends. So we get insights to all the leading companies that we work with. And then two, a big believer of why I'm so passionate about international and having a global company is, you know, there's different things going on in every country, different, they're at different stages, different life cycles of these trends. And so what, you know, could be new in one country could be, you know, something that hasn't even been introduced yet in another. So by having really good communication across the different countries, you know, you can also bring something with a little twist to make it local. You can bring something from one country, make a small adjustment to it, and it's the next big thing in that other country. So we have, you know, access to this type of information that I think helps us quite a bit. And then we spend a lot of time also doing research, developing insights. And I think that all brings it together. Maybe a couple examples in terms of some trends that that are pretty relevant to us right now. One is environmental, social, and governance. ESG is a big thing going on where that, you know, more and more people investing in companies want to pay attention to, you know, the things that a company stands for. And then there's also another trend, you know, 5G is coming in the mobile industry, and that's a big part of our business. So one way that kind of we take those two trends and brought them together is we really have been growing our mobile device trade-in business. So, you know, it's there's a cycle going on where everyone's going to be upgrading their phones to 5G. You know, we're one of the leaders in managing all the trade-in process, whether it's technology, whether it's reselling the devices, recycling devices. So you can see how we also are making a big difference on the environment, because instead of, you know, phones going into landfills and things like that, we're recycling them, repurposing them. And I think, you know, it's creating value for other consumers, but it's also, you know, great for the environment. And this is just a growing trend as consumers are switching to 5G. So I think that's an example of how we take these trends and really, you know, work our strategy around those.
You've briefly mentioned something around innovation and the need to continuously innovate and improve not only your products and services, but even the internal processes as well. The strategies to build and foster the culture of innovation is a fascinating topic, and I can't help but ask some of the maybe practical recommendations or strategies that really help you succeed in that space in terms of really fostering that culture of innovation, that continuous experimentation, especially for a company of that size. I would imagine it takes a special approach, special strategy. So talk to us a little bit from that perspective.
Yeah, I think innovation is something that's almost you have to embed in your culture. You know, I think a good way to think about it is, you know, we want to be the one that's disrupting status quo, not getting disrupted. And when I think back about the history of Assurant, you know, I think about we went public in 2004, John, and, you know, the majority of our business was in product lines and categories that are probably less than probably 10% of our business today. So we've completely changed, evolved, and grew during, you know, during those, all that time. But if we didn't get into new businesses, create new customer experiences, innovate, you know, we wouldn't be as strong as we are today. So I think that is a big part of it, that has to be a, you know, a mindset that you drive, you know, throughout. And then, you know, as I think about the things that we do, being able to, like I said, talk to the to our clients, and as I think about our growth strategies internationally, I think it's all about the way to grow is to bring new innovation to our clients, to our consumers, you know, bring new technology, new customer experiences. And I think if that is the way that you operate, that's the way that you you have as a culture, that change is embraced, not avoided. I think that's the most important thing, is having that strong culture of innovation.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And we could probably spend the rest of the episode talking about that particular space. In terms of entering the new markets, especially on the international expansion side, you know, bringing that global and the local expertise together, I would imagine this, you know, it's a unique approach, a unique strategy in terms of succeeding when you identify those frontier markets and, you know, successfully penetrate that. Can you tell us a little bit more about your approach when it comes to disrupting the marketplaces through innovation and basically taking into account the local, you know, ways of doing business and the purchasing power or how consumers behave? Share with us some of the thoughts around that space.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think there's some magic when you can combine the global expertise of a company, you know, with the local knowledge. And, you know, when I started international, we had an international expansion strategy we had, and it was basically to be in certain countries that we weren't. And some of those were in Asia Pacific. So maybe I can share a couple of examples of some of the journeys we took, you know, to go from a concept of entering, you know, a new country, a new market, to, you know, being 5 years later, being very strong and having some really nice success in some of those markets. And one example I can think of is, you know, we were working with a small local team, and we were working with and having some conversations with clients. So one of the things that happened in a country in Asia was that we started to understand what the client was wanting to do, what their strategy was to grow. And our local team was the one that was able to, you know, to give us the insights of what, you know, what their strategy was. And then what we were able to do as a global team is we could also then see how our capabilities could be taken and adjusted for the local market that actually would fit perfectly to help that client grow, that matches up with what their growth strategy was. And I'll never forget the meeting I was in when we went through and created a great new product concept and a new service. And we shared that with the client, and they said, "This sounds too good to be true." And it was because they were having their, you know, they were launching a new business, and they didn't have a solution for it that matched that new business. And we came in and actually understood it and matched it perfectly. We ended up launching that business. It grew significantly and has been a big success story. So I think that's an example of, you know, taking those insights and creating new innovation from scratch. And then there's another example of, we actually were meeting with a potential partner of ours in a new country, because we look at, do we acquire, do we grow organically, you know, do we partner with someone? And this partner, we started talking about how we would partner with them. And because they had some local understanding of something, but they needed the strength of financial strength of Assurant and the capabilities of Assurant to make that concept a reality. Fast forward through the discussion, instead of partnering, we ended up investing and acquiring that company and created a new service that grew rapidly in that country. So there's lots of ways to do it. But I think if you think about creating something new and innovative, I think that's always the best way to, you know, to create growth.
I love these examples, and just resonates on so many levels with some of the experiences with, you know, when, you know, identifying the strategies for entering the emerging or entering new frontiers. It's always very interesting. And obviously, as an executive, for you to, you know, to surround yourself with the top performers is probably something that's atop of your mind 24/7, whether you're actively recruiting or not. So share with us some of the insights or strategies that really help you succeed in that space when it comes to talent acquisition, surrounding yourself with, you know, the best of the best. So anything that's, especially in this highly competitive candidate-driven market, it takes a special approach, very creative strategies. Talk to us a little bit from that perspective.
Well, now you're speaking my language, John. This is probably my favorite topic of any, and that's what I always share with our people in any forum is our people, talent, and culture are by far my number one priority. And, a lot of people say, of course, that's obvious, but I think the big difference is do leaders really spend the time, a large portion of their time focused on that? And I've learned over the years that, you can have a great strategy, and if you don't have the best team, you're not going to succeed. You can have a mediocre strategy, but if you have the best team, you're going to succeed. So when you have both a really good strategy and a great team, like I think we do, then I think it's something really, really special. And, maybe I can share some of the things that we do, and maybe I'll give a certain call out to someone that really has worked closely with me. His name is Subhashish. He's our human resources, my human resources business partner. We call it the People Organization. But we actually created a dynamic where, I would actually get profiles of all of our best people, all of our top people, when I would go to a country. And so it would actually be my reading on the plane to go there before I went. And so what I would do is I would, we talked about what would be included in that information. And one of the important things is also, what matters to people? What makes them tick? What inspires them? And for us, we need to understand that. And so when I meet with our teams around the world, a big part of what we do is talk about the talent. And I make sure I'm meeting the talent personally. I'm also making sure that I understand, for the ones that are really making the difference, how do we show them all the love? And it may mean different things to different people. Some want a new challenge, some want more compensation, some want, different things, but understanding what motivates them. And then, also making sure that that we're also addressing the talent that may be lacking. And because we want to make sure that the good people aren't having to carry the weight for those that aren't. So we come out of that really saying, let's not just talk about what we're going to do about talent. What actions are we going to take to really do the right things to, to make sure that our best people can feel that? And I always felt like the simple thing is I always want to treat our teams the way I always wanted to be treated. And that means paying attention to them, and knowing them well. And then I guess my last point on that, John, is, a lot of people say, how in the world do you run, 20 plus countries? Like, that seems crazy and impossible. And I said, there's only one answer, and it all comes down to you have to have the best team. And that's been something that, I'm really fortunate to have been able to build over the last few years. And it's made all the difference.
The other area of, talent acquisition is something that's extremely challenging, and I'm yet to see anybody really, really good at that. I'm talking about interviewing. From my past experience, what I've observed is a lot of interviews are based on that personal past experience, which seems to be flawed in a sense that it clouds your judgment from a perspective of what's really the strength that's missing on our team that we're trying to fill that void versus kind of lack of weakness that we can tolerate in that particular candidate. Those are just some personal thoughts around just the overall interview concept. Share with us your strategies to succeed in that space. How do you prepare? How do you ensure that you increase your batting average when you interview candidates? And more importantly, what do you look for in the responses when you talk to prospective candidates who will be joining your team?
Well, first, John, I loved what you said about highlighting strengths of people. And I think that kind of takes you into a whole, category of why does diversity matter? Why is diversity important? And I think that's the most important reason that you just hit on. And I agree with that completely. I think the whole concept of leveraging strengths, it's why, one, at Assurant, we require diverse slates of talent. So that's the first thing that we want to do. We also, when I'm interviewing, I want to make sure there's others that are getting to meet those people as well. So we can, share observations, compare notes. It's never a perfect science interviewing. I wish it was. But I think you can, you can at least get the best minds together, understanding the diverse backgrounds and back to your point in looking for the strengths in people. So you mentioned, what are things that I look for and what do we look for? Things like passion for what you do. I don't think there's any substitute for that. I think, seeing where people are passionate, where they have success, and telling us those kind of stories. I think those are really important aspects, even more so than just the like technical skills or those types of things. But a lot of it's just developing and forming a little bit of that relationship with that person to get to know what really drives them, what value they can really bring to Assurant. And back to your point, I think finding those strengths that match with the strengths of our team that are maybe complementary, I think is something that people don't always do, but I've seen the value. And I could even tell you a funny story about, the differences in strengths as well.
Yeah, please do. Definitely share that story.
So, as you mentioned that, it came to mind, the strengths of people. And at one time I had two people reporting to me, and one of them didn't see the value in one person. And the irony is the other person didn't see the value in the other. And the reason for that is they were different, people, they were different backgrounds, very diverse individuals. And one was very creative, had a very innovative mind, those types of things. The other one was very good with numbers, very logical, things like that. So if I wanted something creative, if I gave it to the logical, numbers driven person, I wasn't going to probably get their strength, but if I wanted that and I talked to the other person, I would get that. And vice versa, if I wanted them to do a financial analysis on something, I probably wasn't going to get the strength of the creative person. And so, but when I combined the two, I had a spectacular team. But, the two of them, I had to talk about making sure that they saw the value that each other brought that they didn't see because they were different than themselves. So that was really the big aha moment for me long time ago, before diversity became, something that is, more talked about today. But I think that was the beginning for me of why it was important from a business perspective, not just because it was the right thing to do and those types of things, but it's good for the company, and it's good, socially to do as well. So that's where I try to communicate that to our teams, that having a diverse team with strong complementary skills is a powerful thing.
I love that story. It definitely resonates on so many levels where you have the conflict of interest, but at the same time, it's could be a combination of a high performing team as well. So that's very interesting. We've touched a little bit about on the talent acquisition side, but the other, growing trend that especially we've observed, coming out of pandemic and then where we currently at, is kind of that quote unquote war on retention, where, employees and other candidates, professionals have so many opportunities on a global scale now with companies operating, virtually. And it's, you know, I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on creating that environment where employees, you know, it's not really a focus on retention, but so much an environment where they can succeed and they feel challenged and at the same time valued. What are your thoughts on creating that particular culture and environment where, you know, retention is not really a concern?
Well, I think creating a culture that, exactly to your point, make sure that it should always be front of mind and a concern, right? That we want to create the environment that that people want to stay. And I think you hit on a couple of key points. You know, I'm a perfect example, John. I never thought I would, you know, be here 23 years later. I thought come in for a couple of years, make a big impact and go do the next thing, you know. So I never would have predicted to be here. But I think, you know, it's one of the dynamics that we try to create for our people is, you know, if I, and I shared this earlier, all the various roles and challenges that I've been able to take on, most people would think, you know, that would have had to happen at five or six different companies, but I've actually been able to experience those new challenges and new opportunities within Assurant. So I think making sure that we provide those opportunities and allow people to take a chance and do something a little different than what they may be doing today, I think is really important. And then I also touched on before, you know, treating others the way, you know, we would want to be treated. So as leaders, we, you know, we need to create the environment that allows people to feel valued, that when they come in every day, they can bring, you know, the best of themselves. You know, for me, I'm not interested in any political things internally. You know, I want our teams to be able to just focus on, you know, doing the best job that they can and creating relationships with their coworkers. So that's part of the culture too, is making sure that we support people to be able to speak up, you know, make sure that we're being inclusive, you know, and hearing our people versus, versus not enabling that open, you know, that open communication. And I think the more open the communication, the more people can express what they want to do, how they want to do it, where they want to go. And I think that, you know, that plus the relationships that we build, I think enable people to feel good about staying at Assurant.
And you've gave her that kind of almost personal endorsement, and from a perspective that you've been with the company for, I believe, 25 years. And I think that speaks to how, I guess, the company really values that, you know, the employees that do stay within the organization and create those opportunities for them to grow internally. I think that's very powerful. Oftentimes seems simple, but overlooked. And these days with companies operating, you know, fully virtual, it just opens up so many opportunities for candidates and employees to look at, you know, other opportunities out there. So that's always interesting to hear the, you know, perspectives as such. Speaking of which, coming out of pandemic and the way you organize your organization these days, I talk to a lot of executives of different size of organizations, and it's always interesting to them how their peers at other companies or industries going about bringing the workforce back to the offices or maintaining the fully virtual environment or creating some type of a hybrid solution. What are your thoughts on that? How are you approaching the next period in terms of the structure of your operations and your workforce?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think one theme that is probably overarching is making sure that we continue to invest in our, you know, our people, our talent, our culture, because, you know, exactly like you said, John, it's much more difficult, I think, you know, being remote, you know, over the past year plus. It's harder to develop the relationships. It's harder for the people to feel the connection, you know, to Assurant, to our, you know, to our fellow, you know, colleagues and so forth. So I think that, you know, making sure that we are investing is really important. In terms of how we're approaching it at Assurant, we are actually going to be providing some new guidelines. I think as of September 7th is when we're going to introduce some new ways to work as we go forward. And I think the most simple way that I would describe it, John, is it's just going to, you know, be more flexible going forward. You know, I think we're going to evolve things, you know, as they go. We're going to have people that are going to be needing to be in the office or on site, you know, for certain roles. Some roles will be fully virtual and some will be flex, or hybrid, you know, part in office and part not. And I think making sure that we enable people to be at their most successful in whichever of those versions makes the most sense is really the way we're approaching it. So September 7th is when we're going to introduce, you know, being able to go back into the office more, you know, in certain locations, but we're still going to maintain, you know, a very flexible environment. I think that's going to, you know, be the way we do things, you know, for the future.
The last segment of each episode, I love to focus on the speaker and your personal thoughts, and more in particular, your content diet. What are the different sources that you consume on a daily basis to keep yourself informed, to keep yourself educated on whatever the trends or the things that are going on in your industry, or maybe perhaps something completely outside of that? Share with us those.
Yeah, and you bring up a really important point, John, that you know, I think to continue to grow, to continue to take on the opportunities that you want to take on new challenges, I think you hit on, and I see why it's one of the questions you want to ask to everyone, is you have to always be a continuous learner. It's maybe the most important thing, you know, people can do to better themselves. I read as much as I possibly can all the time. I try to consume, you know, a ton of content because it does give you the ability to think innovatively, to think about the trends, to understand and connect the dots of all the things going on, you know, in our world, what other leaders are doing and so forth. So in terms of content for me, just some of my favorites over the years, Fortune magazine has always been the one that gave me great insights into other companies, whether it's leaders, whether it's their strategies, and just really good things that I think have always helped me to think differently about how I approach, you know, everything I do at Assurant. I think that's been one. You know, we have our strategy and insights team that sends all kinds of content. I make sure I read all of it. You know, a lot of people can just say, you know, it's not important, I'll delete it. I never delete that stuff. I absolutely read it cover to cover because I think it's just that important. You know, digital articles, I, you know, consume them like crazy. So it can come from all different places there, but I'm doing that. And then on the personal side, you know, I'm a Detroit sports fan, so I've always got to consume any article around Detroit sports, although it's probably not a pretty situation at the moment, but I was born into it. So I'm still loyal to the Detroit teams.
Oh, well, yeah, loyalty is everything. Well, Detroit Pistons, I mean, you guys have some nice prospects coming your way with the new draft picks. So that should be exciting.
Yeah, they won the lottery, so they've got that going for them. So only one way to go is up from that point.
Right, exactly. That's the upside. And last but not least, well, you've mentioned books that you read a lot. I can't help but ask, what are you currently reading? And what is one book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Well, that's a good one, because, you know, I probably don't read as many books as I do all the other things that I mentioned. But if I think about it, it's funny. The last couple of books I actually read were friends who were, one published a book, so I read his, and then someone else who was getting ready to publish a book out of Australia, they sent me a draft to read.
Well, I would love to join those ranks because we just recently, my book just came out finally in hardcover. So I would love to get you a copy of that and get your thoughts on that.
I would love to read it, John. Yeah. Congratulations on that, by the way. That's a tremendous accomplishment.
I appreciate it.
And then, you know, in terms of other books, I love, you know, history of leaders like Abe Lincoln. I read recently just to see, you know, you think that he was all perfect, but, you know, back to the talent that he was always trying to achieve, getting the right people around him. It was a big struggle for him to get the right people around him. So I think those kind of things can, you know, inform us, you know, both from history as well as, you know, that can apply to our business. And then the last thing, I guess, is that comes to mind is my son and I were talking one time, and you know, he's a great kid, and but he's also, you know, a teenager now. So I one of the things that I told him to read was, you know, How to Win Friends and Influence People. So it's a classic that, you know, he could use from on the personal and the future for himself. So that's kind of a good classic, I think, that, you know, would be a good example for some people.
For sure. Great recommendation. And you've mentioned reading the history and biographies of, you know, folks. And one book that I would love to add to that is called The Outsiders by William Thorndike. I believe if I'm saying his last name correctly, but it's a book where they study the kind of the life and the strategies of 8 extremely unconventional CEOs. And how they basically succeed in, you know, unprecedented times. So it's just my little contribution to what we were just talking about. And for our listeners, we'll make those recommendations available in the show notes. Keith, what I love doing with all of my guests is do a follow-up recording in about a year where we revisit the conversation from a year ago and basically take a listen to everything we've talked about and see if everything still makes sense, still applies. So I definitely would love to do that with you as well. And can't thank you enough for your time today, which is extremely valuable. So on behalf of all listeners, I want to thank you for taking the time, share a lot of the strategies. You've been very generous with the information that you shared. So thank you so much for that.
It's been a pleasure, John. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.